What is happening? Welcome to another edition of the On the Corner podcast. My name is Nick Pollock, and today, as I sit in my frozen apartment, we're going to have Kyle Bland representing PL Bot talk about his mock draft. Kyle, it is great to see you.
Yeah, good to see you too. It's a little chilly here in Palm Desert too. It's 70 out right now.
I hate you so much. I am in my Cuffy's fleece that I got for $13 at a clearance sale. I swear to God, it's an old joke. But yeah, my apartment does not have heat right now because the boiler is broken and it is freezing at 30 degrees in New York. So I'm going to power through this and talk about Kyle Bland's mock draft. And this is the last one I will be hosting. And you probably listened to all the other ones on In the Pen and Wins Above Fantasy, This Week in Fantasy Baseball, Hacks and Jacks, Keeper Cut. And now we have PL Bot, the projections here at Pitcher List, telling you who they picked and why they picked them. And Kyle, of course, is going to tell you all about it. And if you don't remember, 12 teams, Yahoo standard, 23 players per team, two utility spots, three outfielders, no corner infield, no middle infield. That is the team settings that we have. So there are more players who have position eligibility where they wouldn't in other leagues. It is shallower. You want to target upside later, et cetera, et cetera. Kyle, you had the ninth pick. I can do math. Ninth pick in this draft. Did you go out of your way to get this pick? And after doing a draft with this pick, do you like that slot?
This was more of a challenge pick for me personally. I like turns. Like, I just like having like, all right, this is bang, bang, get my picks out of the way. I can think about my strategy at the same time rather than kind of have to constantly be adapting. I liked it. I thought it was fun. I got a chance to, I think, you know, start some runs. I felt like I didn't really lose out on anybody. Like, that's the problem with the turn, is you can kind of just see your whole queue get blown up between picks. I liked it. I think the back half of the first round has a lot of value to it. I mean, obviously, if you're not getting a top 3-4 pick, I think there's a drop off. Then when you get into to 5 through 9, like that's actually why I picked 9, is I like Corbin Carroll, spoiler, at the end of that kind of tier of players. So I was happy with the spot. It was fun. It challenged me. I think I'd go there again if given the opportunity.
And when you say that tier of players, that includes Junior Caminero, correct?
It does not. It does not.
Where does PL Bot say you should be drafting Junior Caminero next year?
Right now I have the projections up and we have him as a top 60 player.
Oh my gosh.
Stop. I think I like what he did. He did a lot of damage in Tampa. Like, I think that park inflated a lot of what he did. He also runs a really high ground ball rate. So I think he had a somewhat fortuitous split of homers to ground balls, basically. And I don't believe quite as much. That Rays lineup also not super intimidating. And he's not going to steal you any bases. So he's a 4-category player with the runs and RBIs not being, like, I wouldn't think they're super elite. But, I mean, the power is legit. And he is very young. So there's a lot of room for him to kind of grow or develop. But as it stands right now, PL Bot is not – It's not bought in at the Nick Pollock level yet.
Yeah, okay, well, hold on. All right, this was like the first 2 weeks of October, and
yeah,
Jose Ramirez is off the board, and third baseman's terrible. And I was like, whatever, this is what I'm supposed to do, right? I do want to mention to everybody, we do have our early edition of Projections out. The version 1.0 will be live when, Kyle?
It's going to come out. We're recording this on December 5th. It's going to come out next week. So they should be out on the 9th.
Right. So when you're listening to this, they are likely out. And these projections are different than your typical ones. We'll have a whole breakdown on the site about their success relative to other projection systems, not just season long, but also taking into account a weekly, daily, that kind of assessment too, because we do provide those, of course. And what's so interesting about ours is that we're very much on the skills focus, less so on the past history as others are. It's more about what do they do well and what have we seen them do well before, but generally this is what they're capable of. And that is using PLV, our pitch level value statistic. It is our pitch quantifier that says based on every pitch thrown, these are our expectations for it. That's on location, movement, velocity, and of course, all the other little things that Kyle could talk about for hours. And it pretty much says, all right, based on that, you as a hitter, do we expect you to swing or not? And is that, does that match the model? Okay, when you do swing, are we expecting you to make contact or not? And does that match the model? And then when you do make contact, how far is it going to go? And I've always said the PLV is a hitting stat more so than a pitching stat. At least it's the better seed for one.
Yep.
And our PLV projections utilizing that statistic is so interesting and unique. And it's the only one I use. I kid you not. I just use PLV Process Plus for hitting assessment, and it's the way to go. So this draft is the first edition. It was a rough draft of the projections, I would say. It was like,
yeah,
version 0.1. Is that right, Kyle?
That version 0.1 came out after this draft was done. So we did this in October. It was like mid playoffs when we did this mock draft. So it was still kind of formulating, shaking around. But you know, as the draft went on, the projections got finalized. So some of the end picks are definitely more like project, like they line up with what our version 0.1 and our upcoming like 1.0 launch are going to show.
Nice. And just so you guys know, you can only get those projections with PL Pro. It is $20 a month when you get annually. There are some discount codes, especially if you check out the player or so the starting rotation breakdowns that I'm going to be putting out shortly. You'll see a discount in there also inside of the list. And we also have opened up PL Pro Lifetime. We do it about once a year for a limited amount of time. And if you're interested in that, you can gain PitcherList PL Pro forever at a massive discount if you were intending just to do it anyway. So you'll have those projections. You'll have them also inside of our Live Draft Assistant app, which is what I use for all of my drafts. Cheat sheets and point values, and essentially acts as your auction draft calculator for your league. And it's going to be integrated to what we are really excited about in the new year. That is the PL Pro dashboard. And we'll have more on that in the future. But enough of that. Use his projections and our projections created by the one and only Kyle Bland. And Corbin Carroll was that first round pick. Spoiler alert, as you said. I get it. I mean, here's your dual threat, really five category guy, I should say, in the first round. You feel pretty safe with this.
Yeah, I think he's the kind of guy that if the floor is just wild, that he's has 30 stolen bases every year the last 3 years. Something that he's done that I've liked is he's kind of transitioned from being more of a slappy contact first hitter like he was like 2 years ago. To this last year, he's sold out a little bit of contact to up that home run stroke, that power stroke. And so last year, 30-30 guy, 100 runs, 80 RBIs, and still put up a 259 average. And PLV sees all of that as being completely validated. And like that level of five category production, especially from outfielder spot in a league like this, is great. I love it. I love getting that really solid floor. I don't have any weaknesses after the first round, or I don't have anything that I need to start upweighting as the draft goes on.
Yeah. I mean, Corbin Carroll is a really solid one. It's nice to feel like you have four categories and also are not behind stolen bases, essentially.
Yeah.
Obviously there are other guys that can provide a little bit more in all four, but to not, you know, you don't want to leave the first three, four rounds without any sort of stolen base help, especially in a head-to-head league. Because, yes, you don't want to win the league every week. You don't want that to be your strategy. But you should give yourself a 2-to-1 chance, right? You should give yourself a 33% chance, because in head-to-head leagues, anything can have happened. Kyle Tucker is your second round pick. And do you think that where we assess Kyle Tucker for next year will depend on where he signs?
I think so a little bit, but I don't think it's that I don't think it'll be that big a deal. I think the biggest thing is going to be, I mean, if he signs at a great hitter's park, that's awesome. Like if he, you know, somehow is in Cincinnati, I think that's really going to boost his projections. He's, you know, that the homer totals are going to go up. But I think he's going to be on a competing lineup wherever he signs. There's not going to be like, you know, the White Sox aren't necessarily going to sign him. The Marlins aren't going to sign him. It's going to be a contending lineup. He's, you know, an anchor bat. He's going to be hitting, you know, somewhere in the top three or four, which is going to be great for his counting stats. And he's another guy who's just a five category contributor, even in a kind of a down year. I think by his standards, he had 2020 and in Wrigley, which can be mercurial because of how the wind plays. Sometimes it's in, sometimes it's out. And he was actually dinged a little bit by it. He was 23 homers versus he had 25 expected homers. So, you know, even in a down season, he was looking at like a 25-25 campaign. And that's about where our projections have him too. 25-25, mid 260s average. And again, he's going to be in the heart of a lineup getting great run RBI totals. Like it's kind of like just copy and paste the Carroll pick, maybe with a little less upside because Carroll has a 50 stolen base season under his belt that he could maybe get back into. But yeah, it's just another like, okay, I'm set in every category. I can take some swings elsewhere, whether that's, you know, power only stolen base threats, whether I can take a hit on a batting average, whether I can do like a playing time risk. I really like this back to back.
Yeah. I mean, obviously there's going to be some concern about health for Kyle Tucker, but he's amazing. I don't know. I've had him multiple times and I think that you put him on a solid team in any way, he should be good for the year. It's just about your assessment of health. And that's obviously why he's in the room.
Three plate appearances from 600, and that would have been his third 600 plate appearance season in 4 years. So like Everyone remembers, you know, 2024, you had 339 plate appearances, which is tough. Like that's from your second round pick, that's going to maybe sink your team, but he's not quite the injury risk that I think we kind of think of from like earlier in his career or even from like his last season in Houston.
Sure. I mean, I will mention there was a sap of power due to that injury too this past year. So even though he did get the plate appearances, he had a sub 100 power plus from August 1st onward. And that is way different than the 125 to 130 that he had for the first 3 months of the season.
I will say he has great decision value. So he has elite 130 decision value. And that the way you can think of that is that trickles down into that means if he's not adding anything with contact, well, he's swinging at better pitches to hit. And then if he's not adding anything with power, so like a league average 100 power plus, well, he's swinging at pitches that you're expected to do damage to more often. So it seems a little underwhelming to see that 100 power plus, but know that the swing decisions will trickle down into that. So it's not like I'm, you know, at the end result, I'm not saying he's going to, you know, be league average power. It's holistically, he's going to have more power than average. It's just he's doing it by swinging at pitches to hit hard and not like doing it with like his bat speed, like his intrinsic adding power to the pitches he faces.
Yep, absolutely. All right, so going to your third round, it's Bryce Harper. And it's kind of interesting. Our perception of Bryce Harper has gotten a little bit worse over the years. What is yours right now?
One of my favorite things about Bryce Harper is he's pivoted from this elite walk rate guy. Like he had a 20% walk rate in the COVID season to now he's one of our most aggressive swingers by our swing aggression metric, that he's swinging at 10% more than average. And for a guy like him, who's a great power bat, 124 power stat, at solid power, average contact, so about 100. But what that means is basically his power is going to get into games more. If he's swinging early and often, then that means that, well, he's likelier to get a bat on a ball during a plate appearance. And if he's getting his bat on a ball, he's likelier to hit it hard. And so that's kind of a trend for a lot of my hitters, is they're aggressive and that will help their contact and power stats kind of play up a little bit because they have more opportunities to get that power into a plate appearance than maybe someone who's more passive and maybe only swings once or twice in a plate appearance. Well, that once may just be on strike two. And if they don't make contact, they struck out. Versus if Harper whiffs on the first pitch, he's got two more strikes that he's probably swinging at anyway.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Bryce Harper last year, 27 home runs, 12 stolen bases. Still had some stolen bases here.
I think that's the thing. For the last 5 years, he's had double-digit stolen bases, even when he's had less than 600 plate appearances. So he's not just a non-zero stolen bases. He's actually plus, especially from like that first base position. He's another kind of contributor. I'm not going to bank on it. He's no Josh Naylor, I'll tell you that. But it's definitely like another guy who's like, okay, he's chipping in everywhere.
So I am going to be – okay, look. Do I have permission to be incredibly annoying and pedantic?
Please.
I will be one of the Warriors that will fight for fewer than those play appearances. Not less.
Oh, okay.
It's fewer. That's okay. Fair. I see it on ESPN. They're saying less than 10 wins. What? It's fewer. Well, always – it's fewer.
That's why I stick to the data. Just give me that little side carrot. That's the less than carrot.
Kyle. Yeah. It's the world. I've entered that stage of my life. Okay. Bryce Harper, third round as a first baseman. He still has that eligibility, to my understanding, in Yahoo.
Yep.
Look, you have Matt Olson next round, the end of the fourth. You have Vinny Pascantino in the middle of the fifth. Bryce Harper in the third makes all the sense in the world. You have Jordan Alvarez, Roman Anthony, Pico Armstrong, Byron Buxton, Zach Neto, and Mikel Garcia going after quickly. It's Bryce Harper, I think. Jordan is just too much of an injury risk, I think, right now, but I could be wrong on that one. Roman Anthony is very interesting, but yeah, very good safe pick. Bryce Harper, I like it.
PCA, fourth another round. Guy yeah, who's really good. We like him a lot. The projections like him a lot, but that felt like getting three straight outfielders and three straight guys who are like still on base. It felt like just too much of the same thing. I wanted to at least branch out positionally or stats base wise.
And who was that the projections love?
Pete Crow Armstrong, PCA.
PCA. Yes.
Yeah.
I can't take that risk. I cannot.
It's a lot, but like the stolen bases are real. And so the bat is good enough. Awesome.
Christopher Sanchez is the fourth round pick, and there is a lot of discussion we could have. We're not going to do it. We've done it too much, Kyle. Okay. But we're going to talk about him a little bit. And of course, your future picks with Kyle Bland, Director of Analytics here at PitcherList, after this break. Christopher Sanchez, fourth round. You took him as the sixth overall starting pitcher. And what I'm hearing is that Christopher Sanchez is just going to do it again.
Our projections have him as the fourth starting pitcher. So I took him at six, and I think that's a value. but I think he'll do it again. And let me tell you why. He's got great ratios. He was 80th percentile or better in ERA, WHIP, PLV, strikeout rate, CSW, swinging strike rate, walk rate, and ground ball rate. So he's got across the board contributing in a variety of ways, and he has elite volume. It was the third most innings pitched at 202, and that was even with an arm scare. I think people forget, like earlier in the season, he had a forearm strain scare, and he still threw 200 innings, even after that. This is also the second straight season of 180. He had 180 in 2024, now 200 plus in 2025. So I love that great ratio elite volume combo. He has three plus pitches that he can control, each of which is 50th plus percentile, each of which is 60th plus percentile in swinging strike or CSW. In that sinker sweep change combo, he's going to be on a World Series competing ball club in Philly. So he's going to get a lot of win totals. He goes deep in games, which is also going to boost those win chances per game. I love it. I think he's not, you know, it's not the flashiest strikeout rate, but like an upper 20s strikeout rate when you're going six plus innings every night will still rack up the Ks.
Okay. So this is the one question that I have about Christopher Sanchez that I can't quite answer. And I think I know what it is, but I don't know why it is. Really the biggest problem I see with Christopher Sanchez is that he could be considered a ball and chain, which is he can ball out or he can chain you down. And this is what you get from a lot of volume arms, where it could be the problem with Valdez and Webb and Ray, where I see that 124 whip in 2024, where he had a 9 hit per 9. And then I see in 2025, it was a 7.6 hit per 9. That is legitimately the biggest difference between him being a stud or not. Yes, 26% K rate as well is certainly going to help with that one. 20% 2024. If you have more strikeouts, you're going to have fewer hits per 9. That makes all the sense. You have the increased swing strike rate, 15% from 12.5%, etc. That said, looking at this, do we still feel that Christopher Sanchez is removed enough from that 9 hit per 9 year, that 124 whip versus the 106, that he is now defined himself as this higher strikeout rate guy, that he's not going to dip back into an 8.5 hit per 9, which might produce a 115, 116. And the reason I'm saying this so, that it bothers me so much, is it's over 200 innings. And having that kind of whip in a 12-teamer means that it is more of a chain than it is someone balling out. Especially with the what you're saying is SP4 overall, you don't want that whip that is questionable. I'm not saying it's not possible that he just does this again. He's never going to have something like a 124 again. It's more about identifying what he did as believable. Because yes, what he did, great, awesome. It's totally one of the outcomes that could happen. But is it the outcome that we should be banking on completely for this season?
No.
Right.
I'll be the first to tell you that like 2025 it should be better than every projection says. I mean, it's a 2.5 ERA. That's not going to happen. It's not likely to happen. I think the hits per nine is going to go up. We have his projected at about 8.3. The whip will be about projected at 117, which sounds high, especially for your elite guys. But the way to think of these stats that I think of them is you're trying to think of hits, walks and hits saved over the course of your time frame. And so if he's running a better than average whip over more innings, that's going to impact you roughly similarly to a guy who has a better whip in fewer innings, that it's saving you kind of the same number of walks and hits for your total innings that week. Does that make sense?
It does. Still a 117, if that's what you're saying it is.
Yeah.
That is not, you want that kind of volume with a 105, 110 for the week or so. And it's sure adding an extra inning between it, that means it's bringing down. So it was a 6 of a 1.505, and then it's an inning of a, I don't know, 150 or something like that to get to the 117, right?
For context,
yeah,
a 117 whip was a top 20 whip by starting pitchers last season, by qualified starters.
By qualified starters, which means 160 plus innings.
Yeah, which if I'm looking
right. at 200. So like the qualified is a weird one these days. What we do is for our percentiles is we do top 200 pitchers and batters faced. And it doesn't surprise me that that would be top 20 in that metric, because if you're throwing over 162 innings in this day and age, that means you're generally going to be among the better starters in the league.
Yeah.
Long story short, I get it. I don't really have a definitive order for everybody after the first three, and I don't think anybody really does.
Fair.
So it's just do what you want. I won't be drafting Christopher Sanchez, especially at this point. Okay, cool. Awesome. We're going to move on. Corey Seager, fifth round. I love this pick. Tell me more about it.
Oh, it's so great. It's... He's elite at process. Sorry. Wow, Kyle, what a great draft you did. It's elite process plus. He had a 133, which was seventh among all hitters who faced 400 pitches, which is a pretty low threshold. We have our new hitter skills similarity scores that we've been putting out and distributing around, and he has great comps. So based on his POV hitting stats, his top 10 comparable hitters had a 270 average, 37 homers per 600 plate appearances. So like the underlings look good. Similar seasons in the past look good. He's another, I mentioned this, Harper, aggressive swinger, swings 5% more than expected given the pitches he's faced. So he'll tap into that game power more often. I know the big bugaboo with Seager is injury. He's always kind of nursing something. He's never going to be that guy. He's not going to get you 660 or 700 plate appearances, or you really shouldn't project for that. But even per 600, so one of my favorite things, and this was something that Scott Chu really banged the drum for, was we put out per 600 plate appearance projections. So you can kind of see like, okay, on a rate scale, what do the hitters like all look like given the same playing time? And per 600, he's a top 15 hitter that straight up the balance of what he does with the bat makes a top 15 hitter. And he's a guy who's not going to steal bases. So he's getting that strictly with just how well he hits for power and with what his lineup is. So I'm comfortable taking a little bit of that playing time risk to shore up a shortstop position, which there are a lot of good, like solid to good options. Pena was another option I considered kind of at this point in the draft, but I, you know, with the stability and the base I had from my, you know, top two hitters in Carroll and Tucker, I really liked being able to like lean into like, okay, here's a guy who's just going to mash at shortstop, which is a position that, you know, has really good guys, but like his ability to hit homers is great.
Yeah, I mean, it's a seal of approval for me. I just think he's too good, and the drop off at shortstop is shortly after. I mean, Bo Bichette goes in the later of the sixth round, yeah, and then Jeremy Pena later in the sixth, and it's just there's not much. So yeah, if I knew that I
Bo Bichette, I think.
Yeah.
I think we saw the playoffs were happening while this was going on, like we said, and they started playing him at second, and I think that made it that Bo Bichette's probably playing second base next year wherever he signs, and so he might get bumped up because the idea being, oh well, he'll be second base eligible shortly into the season. So just something to keep in mind with him.
Yeah, that's a really good call, Bo Bichette being a possible second baseman, considering that Bryce Terang is like the second or third one off the board. Oh boy. And he went in the fourth round just due to that position scarcity. So yeah, you won't even get that in all likelihood in that respect. We're going to move to the sixth round, and this is where there are some times with PLBOT that I have some confusion because it's really just injury questions. And we don't really know the full timeline of Spencer Schwellenbach right now, Mr. Crescendo. If we fully knew, hey, there's nothing wrong with him now, he's fully healed, he's great, absolutely, I think this actually would be where you should have Spencer Schwellenbach. But because there's the confusion, I can't draft him above Cole Reagans, for example. Now, the projections, PLBOT is saying like Spencer Schwellenbach is normal and fine, so we love him, and here he is in the sixth round. Is that right, Kyle?
Yeah, I mean, so this is something, yeah, playing time is more art than science for sure. I have, you know, playing time algorithm and formula that I run through, but I also am taking into account like news and where a guy goes and plays for. But with Schwellenbach, the news at the end of last season was, okay, he's trending to come back at the end of the year. And I think it's a case where if the Braves were more in the playoff hunt, that they probably would have had him come back to pitch, or definitely if they were like in the playoffs, they would have had him probably for the postseason, because it sounded like that's what he was trending towards. But since they missed the playoffs, I think that there wasn't a real urgency to kind of get him back in games. But that was at the end of the year, it was like, okay, Schwellenbach's getting close to a return. And I think rather than maybe push it, they were like, oh, well, you know, let's give him a full offseason plus this rehab. That I'm confident that he's basically getting twice as long to recover as he needs to. And so he'll be back up and running at the start of 2026.
I hope you're right. I would think that there's more of a discount at the moment just because of the confusion or lack of clarity. for Spencer Schrullback. But the skill set, I mean, it was amazing. He increased velocity. He has great command of his pitches. He has a wide arsenal. Lots of opportunities to miss bats. He's a fantastic pitcher. It's just all about staying on the field at this point. And it's possible we don't see the same Spencer Schwalenbach. He did increase his velocity quickly, and then it might be a little bit lower when he returns because he doesn't want to push his arm. It was a fractured arm, I believe, due to it.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a concern. I think one of the things that helps me with that is that he wasn't just reliant on that fastball. I mean, don't get me wrong. It was great. 99th four-seam CSW percentile. Like, that's like literally elite, like the tip of the spear, like the best. Right. But he has like legit throws 5 pitches 10%+ of the time. And absolutely, all of them were better than average by PLV. Only the cutter wasn't better than average by whiff rate and CSW as well. And that cutter, well, actually, he uses it for an early ball and play pitch. It's 98th percentile early pitch rate. He throws it 82.5% of the time in early counts. And it had a good, it was good at limiting damage. It was a 64th percentile ex-woba on contact. So it's a pitch that he's throwing early in counts that gets weak contact. So that's a great pitch that like makes me feel confident that it allows
him to go deeper. Yeah. Cutters, baby! But yeah, so I mean, it's just really a question of is he going to be back and normal? I don't know. Back and normal. So I personally don't have him as ranked this high, but if he is having a normal spring and also there's no hiccups, there's no day-to-day signs with him or anything like that, then yeah, you will see him probably above Bradish for me. Around this, I guess it's really just Cole Reagans and Jarian are the ones that are on the board still at this point who I would be favoring over Schwellenbach. I might even say Bradish and Bieber ahead just because they have done it before. While Schwellenbach is still kind of, we're figuring this out with him, seeing how much he can actually survive in a year. Seventh round is Kyle Stowers. Tell me about this guy.
Yeah. So Kyle Stowers he's a bat speed guy. He's 75-mile-an-hour bat speed. So there's a lot of power potential kind of within that swing. I talked about our hitter comp tool for PLV that all of his comps pointed to 30+ home runs per 600 plate appearances. He's another guy, very aggressive, swings more than expect, 5%, almost 6% more than expected given the pitches he's faced. The reason he's not higher, I didn't have to draft him earlier, is he does have very suspect contact rate. So he has an 80 contact plus, which is not good. That's pretty low tier contact. But this is something that it seems counterintuitive that, well, if a guy's swinging more often and makes bad contact, like how is that helpful? But it's something where, well, if you swing 3 times in a plate appearance, as long as you make contact once, like it's a ball in play. And so like there is a little bit of a counterintuitive relation between swinging more and it helps you if you make bad contact. So I like that. I like that it'll put that bat speed, that power into play more often. Miami's lineup, it's frisky is how I'd like to describe it. Frisky. It's not going to be good.
I don't know how to interpret frisky.
I think frisky is going to be, they're going to have 3 or 4 guys who are going to be probably in that like 110 to 120 WRC plus range where they're going to be better than average. So it's not just going to be a dumpster fire like you would kind of normally think with the Marlins. But I think that they'll get guys on base in front of him. I think they'll have functional enough bats behind him that he won't be held back by low counting stats. And so that's something that, you know, generally I'm also not a huge fan. Like I think counting stats, like runs and RBI specifically, can be kind of variable. Like I don't like to rely on them as much because they are so hit and miss. But for him, I'm not too concerned about it. Even in a a shortened 450 plate appearance season, 25 homers, a 290 batting average, which I think, which is coming down. Don't get me wrong. That batting average is coming down, but I still think that he'll be a functional power bat in a lineup that I think people are underrating, I'll say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's someone, Kyle Stowers is the perfect example of a guy who, well, this time last year, no idea who he was. And then as I do these drafts, I start to realize, okay, hold on, this guy actually was this good. I do have a little hesitation going after him just because of the lineup around him and how much, you know, what the ceiling actually is with his counting stats. But it is really encouraging to see this kind of bat speed translating to that power plus, that really elevated his process plus to like 125, yeah. It looks like.
And here's a fun stat. We have our MLB swing speed app as well, which takes mm-hmm. in, you know, Savant provided bat speed, swing length, and we have a proxy for swing acceleration. So how quickly can you get up to that bat speed? The number one hitter is Kyle Stowers.
Get out of here.
Because he gets that 75 miles an hour with a 6.7 foot swing length. So wow. Some of the guys around, like, you know, guys will swing the bat faster. Like O'Neill Cruz gets up to, you know, 79, 80 miles an hour, but it takes him almost another foot to get there. So Stowers gets up to speed with a fairly compact swing. And that's something that I really like. Like players around him are Pete Alonso, Drake Baldwin, Schwarber, Riley Green, Corey Seager, Witt. Like those are all guys who are top.
Drake
10, top
Baldwin. 10. Whoa. That is.
Yeah.
That is honestly the thing that I'm taking away from this, considering that Drake Baldwin went, I don't know, in the 20th round.
Oh, yeah. I love that. I love, like, if you're waiting, like if you're really waiting on catching Drake Baldwin, like in like the last round, that's screaming value to me.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. 20th round here out of 23. Also, if you were at First Pitch Arizona, you might've gone to Eno Saris's swing speed presentation. And the biggest takeaway is that average swing speed is not really what matters, because average swing speed will also be relative to where you make contact. And if you make contact out in front, then you're going to have a faster bat speed, because as Kyle's mentioning here, you have more time to accelerate before contact. And if you are making contact deeper into the plate more often, essentially going opposite field more, then it's going to be a weaker bat speed. So you really shouldn't be grading exactly on that, he's saying. And he was like, well, hold on, we should be doing it, as Kyle is saying, of acceleration, how fast they're getting to it, which is a big deal with it. It means that you don't need to be so out in front to hit that that swing speed. It's an interesting thing that we're all learning, and it's going to be evolving over time. But that is obviously good company to be in with Kyle Stowers. And now I'm circling Drake Baldwin. Okay, eighth round is a guy, is a pitcher who I've warmed up to over the past few weeks, and it's Logan Webb. And you might see a trend here for Kyle in his draft picks of his pitchers, where it's all about volume as much as possible. And it's what the understanding is, Spencer Schwalbach going every 5 days, I imagine, too. But Logan Webb, I know, strikeouts galore, right? The thing I'm just worried about, of course, is the potential floor of his whip. The strikeout rate did get a little bit worse in the second half. Not as bad as I thought it was, but it did get worse. To about 23% as opposed to the 27%, 28% he had earlier on in the season, as his four-pitch mix turned really into a three, and he became more changeup dependent once again, which hadn't worked the previous year or two. And Logan Webb is still great, and he's going to be going a lot in this season. He's better in 15-teamers than he is in 12s, because you can't bank on the better whip, which will bring you down. But yeah, he is going to get a ton of strikeouts and wins. And if there's anything you want to add to that, I mean, I think Logan Webb is kind of Logan Webb, but I am finding that he should be around SP20 for me or something like that.
Yeah, I think pretty much everything I said for Christopher Sanchez runs true here. A lot of the same principles, maybe a little bit less upside and a little bit lower floor, you know, as we saw this last year with the 9 hit per 9, the 124 whip, which I believe is pretty true talent. Like our projections have him at a 123 whip, and we still like him because just because of that volume, because it's the whip isn't great. It's like an average whip, which is not necessarily what you want from your top two starter.
I do want to mention it's below average in 12 teamers. If you are trying to, you know, it's going to hurt you week to week in your head to head leagues to have a 124 whip from a 7-inning performance. It's going to weigh you down more than other guys. So I do want to mention that.
That's true. But the flip side of that is that will be made up. That will boost his kind of weak strikeout rate, 24%.
Oh, absolutely. The other elements are good.
It will boost his ERA.
Whip is going to be an anchor.
And I think as much as wins are kind of a random stat, one of the biggest factors is pitching deeper into games.
Absolutely.
Because if you're pitching deep in games, you're probably pitching well, and there are just less opportunities, less chances for something to go awry. I'll say, not to throw the bullpen under the bus.
Fewer, Kyle.
Ah, you got me. All right. The next time I say it'll be fewer. There are fewer chances for the bullpen to kind of let that win slip by.
And you just have more opportunities to, you know, if you leave in the sixth, then if the team is winning by the end of the sixth or in the seventh, then, you know, you don't get that. But if you are still pitching, then, you know, it's more opportunities for you to have.
At least like the left side of their defense with Adames and Matt Chapman, like those are great fielders. I mean, Chapman's platinum glove candidate every year. The outfield is sus. I know Elio Ramos is an adventure in the outfield. I've seen the clips, trust me. And then I know they're maybe playing Devers at first, which is also kind of its own, you know, adventure. But I think at least for like the hot corner shortstop, they've got legit plus defenders there. So I feel pretty solid about that, especially for a guy who's, you know, consistently running elite ground ball rates.
Yep. There's not much more to say here with Webb. So we're going to move on to your next pick. And who was that at third base in the ninth round?
It's Isak Paredes.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. Love it. He's the irony being he's like the ultimate model breaker, that he's a guy who has, you know, we were talking about swing acceleration and swing speed, and he's like the worst. Like he's got like he's second worst for qualified swings. But because it's an 8-foot long swing and the speed is 69 miles an hour. So he's got over a foot longer swing than Stowers and gets 6 miles an hour less from it. But the reason that swing is so long is because he pulls everything. He's like the elite 100th percentile in pulled air, pulled fly ball rate. So he's always just dropping those fly balls just right down the foul pole. And he's, you know, now that he's in Houston, which is the, I would say like basically the premier right-handed pull homer stadium. Like it's a match made in heaven. I love his ability to just keep dropping in those homers just inside the foul pole, right over the fence. Like your homers don't need to go 50, like the ones that go 50 feet past the fence count the same as the ones that go 1 foot past the fence. You know, the ones that dead center count the same as the ones down the foul pole. So that's something I really like. He's a guy who's Houston's going to be a good lineup again. Altuve's on the downswing of his career. Yeah. Yordan is always injured, just sometimes more injured than other years, but it's going to be a good lineup. They're going to be hunting for the playoffs. He's going to be right in the heart of it. He's going to get a ton of playing time because he's solid at third. And yeah, I just like it. I like this one of, well, the things he does generally aren't sustainable for the broader population of players, but he's such an outlier that it works for him and can be sustainable for him specifically.
Yeah, I mean, I get it completely. Also, the third base crop is very minimal. You have Matt Chapman going the next pick. You have Addison Barger and Royce Lewis and Noelvin Marte. And yeah, that isn't good. Not good. So I get that this is kind of one of the last options. Was there someone else you're looking at as a backup plan here?
In this round, I like Torkelson. I think that's a kind of underrated, but I already had first base covered. Perdomo, I think is like he's not going to do 2025 again, but I think he's going to be closer to that than I think the market is pricing him at. Páez, another outfielder, and I had already had three, so like I kind of painted myself into a corner, but he's another player I like. And then Nolan McLain being the one of the pitchers that I was most interested that came like kind of right after that pick that maybe I could have grabbed him a little bit. Those were some of the other players that I was considering. But yeah, I saw the state of third base. I was like, oh, Paredes is set.
Yeah. It's okay. You don't need to get Nolan McLain. Chase Burns, 10th round, though. Way more fun in my view. Oh. Yes, I know, two pitch. Oh, my gosh. We don't really love going after that fastball slider. Hopefully there's something else that develops. I think there is a chance that actually Chase Burns does add more. It's not a complete set in stone thing that he's just going to be two pitches. But man, he is electric and you seem to like him a lot here in the 10th round.
Yeah, I'm just a huge fan. Even going back to like his amateur profile, like his scouting report before the draft, it was, you know, plus 70 grade fastball, plus 70 grade slider. That to me has been validated into his MLB career. And I take that into, you know, I'm always considering that for younger guys or like guys who will be rookies, but I heavily weigh what I see in the show, mostly because I have just much better data to analyze, but it's also, I can see what pro hitters do with that of like it, you know, striking out the side versus a college team or, you know, a double A team is a lot different than doing it versus a team in the majors. And, you know, he had that crazy run where he started with like three or four straight starts that had 10 strikeouts, which is just absurd. Yeah, the stuff is just, it's otherworldly. And I also really, really like his ability to locate it. The walk rate this year was fine at 8.5%, but I think he's someone where he puts the pitches is better than what his walk rate says. So like something like his location plus, will be quite good, elite mistake rate. So he's not allowing, you know, a lot of meatballs when he does throw in the zone. 35.6% strikeout rate. 35.6 yeah. From a starter who was 22 last year. Like it's crazy. And I know it's 40 innings. It's 40 major league innings. He did throw 60 in the minor. So he has 100 pro innings last season. So it's easier to kind of see a jump going forward. But even in our projections, we don't have him like going that much past 100. Actually, we have it 93, which I think is going to tick up for version one, but the per pitch quality is just, it's so good. Like just such elite PLV marks, 91st percentile in swinging strikes. So it's not like he's getting a lot of like, you know, benefits of the call for the umpire. The issue is going to be he got hit hard. And he's in a park where getting hit hard will absolutely penalize you. Great America Ballpark is the worst park for homers allowance. And if you're going to be a pitcher like Burns, you need to be able to mitigate that damage, or you need to be more of a ground ball pitcher. And right now he's not either of those.
Okay. I haven't done my full-on Chase Burns analysis yet. This is the first time I'm really scrutinizing it, and I am noticing something that I think gets overlooked a bit. Really, Chase Burns has had 7 games, and yes, he had all of September, but those were 2 innings at most out of the pen, and I don't really like judging starting pitchers from those moments. That's kind of like bullpen day almost. It's not really what we should expect. You can go max effort at times. It's just a different feel anytime you do that. And what's very interesting is that he had a 4-start stretch. And I'm going to say it like this, that it was 10 strikeouts to end his starting regime. But wait, Nick, there was that game on the 3rd where he went 1 inning. That was the Speedway game. And if you don't remember, they tried to start it. He pitched 1 inning, 2 strikeouts, and then they suspended it. And Brent Suter went and pitched that game after. So he pretty much just got skipped over. And then he had another 10 strikeout games. That's four straight. And what's interesting is the three starts before for Chase Burns, it was an 8 strikeout debut against the Yankees. And then he got blown up in Fenway. Right? Not even two outs. One out here. Didn't get a single strikeout. It was just terrible in 33 pitches. And then it was 7Ks and then the 10K games. So if you really want to think about it, of six starts of seven of Chase Burns' career, or anytime he's gotten at least four innings, he's had at least seven strikeouts. I mean, he is a strikeout machine. And that is very much correct. However, Kyle, the first 10 strikeout game was against Rocky Road. The second was at the Nationals. The third was hosting the Dodgers. Fine. Okay, but he sold 33 runs, seven base runners, 5.2. And then it was at Pittsburgh was the other 10 strikeout game. And I will say right now, I can't rank Chase Burns that highly because we just haven't seen enough yet. Those are generous matchups for a lot of his success. It was 4.2 innings and 5 innings in the previous two games with the Yankees and Phillies. And of course, there was that Fenway one. It's just still very mysterious. And I'm trying as much as I can draft pitchers who have done it before as much as possible. So I would be very surprised if I had Chase Burns on any team. It's just how it is. It's like I'm so torn because, yeah, so clearly like the skills are obviously very good. We know this, but we also don't really know it because he wasn't challenged properly. You know, he wasn't put right in scenarios that feel like a normal season. And that to me gives Grant's hesitation. There's more, confusion or haze assigned to Chase Burns. So I'm out.
The lack of a third pitch is tough. Like that's one that like you hope for some development. The Reds, I know, have a lot of smart people. But we've even seen with Hunter Green that like he was a guy who was fastball slider. Can he had a third pitch? And then he kind of still hasn't, but has just transcended the ability to need one.
Well, right. Well, I mean, okay. So with Hunter Green, the big transformation was that he was able to advert and not have a steep attack angle with it. Right. 1.2, I think it is height adjusted VA for Green, and it's like 16 to 17 vert. Chase Burns is a really steep attack angle. I think it got less steep as it went on, but is 17.5 vert isn't good for his attack angle. And so really I just think of the parabola meme of stupid guy, smart guy, normal guy. Normal guy is so upset because how could it be good? You know, velocity doesn't matter when the, you know, under the hood stuff is terrible. And then super smart says, yeah, velocity is good. And dumb guy says velocity is good because it's 98 to 99. I think I've seen you tweet this out. So this is exact one.
Guy throws gas.
Yeah. Throwing gas is good, guys. That's very good. So I do wonder if it is like how much that velocity is going to play into 13% swing strike rate. I remember initially watching him and thinking, yeah, this actually is going to get hit still. It's not Joe Ryan fastball of success, right?
No.
Which is interesting.
It's different. I think like a comp could be something like what we've seen from Spencer Strider. I'm not saying he'll have necessarily Strider's, you know, Cy Young winning career or season, but like, he was a guy who had the fastball slider base that he really relied on, that it was a ton of Ks. It was also, he got hit hard. Like his career, he has a higher ERA than you'd expect given like, oh, he strikes out the side, but like, no, he's got a mid to upper threes more seasons than not. And I mean, this last season, I don't want to talk about, it made me sad, but
he's not returning.
Even his 2023, it was a 3.86 ERA, which like you see, oh, it's a sub-3 FIP, sub-3 XFIP. But it's like, well, because he gets hit hard. And like that's not going to, you know, FIP and XFIP are taking your homers into consideration, sure. But like the other batted balls, if those are getting barreled up, you know, maybe they're not homers, but like those are going to be hits. And so I think that's something that Chase Burns might fall a little bit into of – guy who, you know, looks like he should never allow a run because he strikes everybody out, but well, actually, you should give some weight to getting hit hard. That he might be, the ERA might always be a little disappointing based on what the rest of his stats say. Like, he's the opposite, the anti Logan Webb and Chris Sanchez. Of like, oh, his whip's going to be great. Oh, but his ERA is 3.39.
Yeah. It's just so much of a mystery to me. And I hate it. I hate that. I don't like the park. I don't know if he's able to hold on for a full season. I don't know if there is a third pitch coming. I don't know if the velocity is going to hold for that four-seamer and if it's not going to get hit enough. But the one element I will say, his command is far better than 8.5% walk rate.
Yeah.
He locates upstairs the four-seamer. He locates the slider down and away from righties. He's really good at it. And I think that is actually the most undervalued or underappreciated element of Chase Burns. So we'll see how this plays out. I'm going to move on here because we are, my gosh, going to go a little bit long in this one. And we can't do that. I'm not allowed to. So Trevor McGill is your next one, 11th round. Seems like a pretty easy closer. 11th round, you need to get a closer you want with Trevor McGill. You should be getting more saves in Milwaukee.
Yeah, I mean, I think I saw in our group chat that Rick Graham, you know, closer whisperer, he gave me like a thumbs up or a fire emoji when I announced the pick. So that's all I need to see. But he was, I mean, you go to our player page, look at his header, first in PLV, first in PLA. Like, he's really good. And Milwaukee is a very good team. Like, he's going to get his saves.
Get a lot of opportunities there.
Yeah. And like, to me, like, this is a guy I am very against drafting the first reliever. I'm happy to let a bunch go. And then I'll kind of see, and that's the case here, where I think 7 relievers went before this. And so I was like happy to pick up Trevor McGill, who's just as capable of being the number one reliever at the end of the year.
You know what's so funny? His mechanics remind me of a pitcher that you all are never going to guess, unless you know his mechanics and you can actually figure it out. I'm going to say it right now, is a surprise Houston Astros pitcher who then turned into a reliever and bounced around a little bit. This was about 3-4 years ago, maybe longer. His name is Chris Davinsky. And I call it sitting down. It's like you start your windup and then you sit towards first base and open yourself up. And how do I know this so quickly? Well, I go to our player pages where we have a GIF of everybody and what they throw. And so 99 miles per hour. Creates a 98 PLV, 98 percentile PLV. And then you have a curveball that is, 87, 88 with a 65% strike rate. That's how he does it. It's pretty good. You just need those two pitches when you're a reliever. He's really good. I love this pick. It's great. It's kind of what I'd be doing too at this point. I mean, I took Devin Williams because he was ranked higher, apparently. But I might not be a good one now. With the Mets, because maybe they go and get Edwin Diaz, and what do you know, he's not the closer. Luke Keschel in the 12th round. Tell me about him.
Yeah, so this is something where I'm not looking to jump second base. Like, I'm generally not a huge, positional scarcity, you got to bump him up. But this was, okay, we're getting towards the bottom of the second base barrel. I liked him. I think he showed a lot of promise this season. He kind of did everything well. He also he ran a lot. So this is someone who's going to contribute to those stolen base totals for me and like allow me to play the guys like that, your Isak Paredes, Corey Seager, Kyle Stowers, that like this helps make up for it a little bit. In addition to being just a general all-around contributor, I think, like, for example, he came right after Jackson Holliday was picked. And I think Luke Keschel has better fantasy skills than Jackson Holliday does. I think Holliday might be kind of more of your prototypical, like, better real life player than fantasy player, because he's going to get you mid-teens homers and maybe mid-teens stolen bases, which don't really move the needle a lot in fantasy, versus a guy like Keschel. Like, he can get you 25 stolen bases in a season. He can get you 15 to 20 homers that, like, those are the things that add up. And so I really liked it. I was impressed by what he did in half a year. It's not the most impressive bat, but it's definitely functional for being one of the last second basemen chosen.
Well, there you go. That's Luke Keschel, and I'm going to go for Jackson Holliday. Ivan Herrera in 13th round as your catcher. You couldn't resist.
Oh, he's one of my favorites. I think this is a Yahoo specific one because he is catcher eligible there. He didn't, I think he had 14 games started, so he might not be catcher eligible everywhere, but it's so good that he's got his process plus. He had one of the best process plus for all catchers. I will say kudos to you because you have Ben Rice, who's probably my favorite overall catcher value. Because I mean, he mashes.
Yeah, but he's a darling.
Sticking to Ivan Herrera, the
favorite process plus guy.
Yeah. Ivan Herrera, though, he kind of does everything. It's a very good bat. St. Louis is going to be, it's an aging but still competitive lineup. So he's going to get his counting stats. I mean, he had 66 RBI and 450 plate appearances, which is pretty solid production for your catcher. I think he's going to get more plate appearances. They talked about they're having him set up to be a full-time catcher next year. They showed last year that they're happy to DH him. He had 89 DH starts. So I think playing time is going to go up for him, and all of that DH friendliness is going to keep him relatively healthier. He also stole 8 bases last year, which is, I mean, that's bordering on plus territory for a catcher. So like, it's just something where another just great floor. I think the ceiling's really good using our kind of process plus metrics. I'm happy to get him pretty much everywhere I can.
There you go. And you're willing to do it in the 13th round instead of going for Drake Baldwin in the 20th. Is that right?
Yeah, I like Ivan Herrera as the 8th catcher in a league where maybe it's more strict with your game started threshold. Drake Baldwin's going to be my move. If I can't get Ben Rice at a price that I like, then I'm going to just wait and go Drake Baldwin. And definitely 2 catcher leagues, Drake Baldwin's probably going to be on every single one I have.
All right, there you go. All right, so we're going to move on here. We're going to go quickly. Now, the 14th round is Zach Wheeler. And I said, Kyle, are you sure? Because at the time, we didn't really know what kind of timeline we're going to get from Zach Wheeler. Now we know it's going to be not before the end of May. June is kind of what Dombrowski has said of, like, if you look at the timeline, that's where it ends up. We still don't even know if that's what's going to be. I would imagine you wouldn't be doing this now with that knowledge. Is that right, Kyle?
Yeah, that's correct. So I looked at Baseball Prospectus has a really good kind of injury tool for comparing timelines. From what I saw from when he got injured roughly to get back, my model put him out at 160 innings, which is aggressive, but I thought was arguable. Like, that's probably like the one of the friendlier outcomes, but I thought, that's okay. I'm going to be dinging him down definitely closer to 100 innings now based on, the news that's kind of come out now. I think he's still, that he's right up there with that top 3 on per inning, like, rate stats. He's just so incredible. I mean, he's coming back from injury. He's, getting older as we all are, but he's, definitely on the far end of the aging bell curve for pitchers. He was someone that I was happy to, this is the aggressive pick for sure. And maybe one that I would dial back a little bit, especially Pablo Lopez was on the board.
Sure was.
Yeah. So, even like Shane McClanahan, that there are a lot of different, like, there are a lot of guys that, like, well, if I want to take an injury risk, maybe McClanahan, Pablo Lopez is available and maybe going to, a better winning ball club. That, like, those, there were a couple guys I probably would have picked in hindsight, but I'd still, if I'm picking an injury risk with elite skills, I'm not going to be that upset about it.
Sure. 15th round is Andrew Abbott, a Swatch who just one of the more confusing lefties, I think, out there over the years. And 15th round over someone like Shane Baz is interesting to me. I'm curious where PLBOT stands on Andrew Abbott.
Yeah, Andrew Abbott, this was one I think the projections weren't quite fully cooked yet. So I was looking at a lot more of our results are PLV metrics. So like he had a 512 PLV, which was 75th percentile, really solid, backs up, great ERA, 287. That's not going to happen again. 115 whip, good. I don't think that's that's also probably not going to happen again. And then the problem is it's in Great America Small Park. And so he's another tough one where his results are always going to probably be worse than what the underlyings looked like. But I did like the PLV based underlying metrics. I thought, you know, he had 166 innings last year. I'm willing to kind of roll the dice a little bit that how he succeeded in 2025 can stick around a little bit into 2026. He'll give some back, but he did well enough and he showed solid enough underlyings that he could be a plus for my team going forward.
So the biggest thing that I'm seeing for Andrew Abbott over the years is an embrace of the changeup and curveball in two strike counts. Lefties for both and righties for both. Yeah. So changeups and curveballs getting thrown in two strike counts, that ultimately allowed for more strikes on both of them. 60 to 68% for the curveball and about 58 to 63. And there is your walk rate getting reduced over the years. I can't express enough, guys. Think about just think about what causes walks. Oh, yeah, not throwing strikes. So if you have more strikes, you will have fewer walks. And whip is just a product of hits or walks for the most part. So if you see a massive drop in whip, it's one of the two usually. Hits are actually like the same. And then you have walks that are dramatically different from 9% to 6%. Home runs also came down a lot. It was 1.63 to 1 for Andrew Abbott. And I would likely say it's because of the more aggressive usage of those changeups and curveballs from year to year, and less reliant on sweepers. And also he did add a cutter. That's really cool. So I don't say it's not possible for Andrew Abbott to be good again. It's just not, he's not this amazing. Like, we just always know that he's not this amazing. 20% K rate, sub 3 ERA, 115 whip. Like, really though? Yeah, it's hard for me to really lean on a fastball that is, I don't know, 92, 93 without anything remarkable. It gets strikes, but
it's the anti-Chase Burns.
Yeah, you could say that. In this late in the draft, though, in the 15th round, I would prefer Shane Baz or Noah Cameron. I think Noah Cameron has more of a little bit of a wider arsenal and not in the same situation that Andrew Abbott is in. But I don't hate it. Like, it's fine. You should have Andrew Abbott on your 12 teamers, and to get in the 15th round, a guy you're likely not going to drop is very cool. Ryan Nelson's in the 16th, and I've gone back and forth on Ryan Nelson, and I'm on the pendulum. I am now out on Ryan Nelson, and it's for a very simple reason. But first, I want you to tell me your thoughts on Ryan Nelson here in the 16th round.
I just like the fastball. The fastball, well, right, I think, is really good. I think it's good in ways that aren't going to be immediately obvious. It's not going to be this crazy strikeout, swinging strike getter. It's not going to be this whiff machine. It was, you know, 61st percentile in swinging strike rate, sure. It was 40th in called strike, CSW, called strikes whiffs. But it was elite by PLV. It was a 539 PLV on the four seam. I think that how he locates it allows him to basically earn that 75th percentile expected wOBA on contact. That I think that he jams hitters. He makes life challenging for them. I think throwing four pitches helps make his reliance on the four seamer work a little bit. It's 60% four seam, which is a lot, but he throws a cutter, a slider, and a curve all 10% of the time. So he allows people to guess or second guess. Well, fastball's probably coming, but maybe not this time. And I think that just allows him to play up. I think that's going to help limit his hits allowed. And we saw kind of what that looks like of a guy who has a solid walk rate, who limits hits allowed, that suddenly now we're up to a 107 whip in 150 innings. That's kind of what we're talking about of what's the downside of Christopher Sanchez and Logan Webb of like, well, this is a guy who, you know, isn't allowing all of those hits for, you know, a variety of reasons.
Kyle, have we created a strike PLV and a ball PLV?
I don't think we've talked about it. We haven't explicitly made one, but that's something that we can kind of make more official for 2026.
Yeah, I feel like in a lot of cases, I think, for example, Ryan Nelson's PLV is high because he has a 71% strike rate and a 2.6% mistake rate. Right. So he throws it a lot in the zone, but doesn't have a fastball that should get crushed when he throws it over the zone. And that means like you should have a very high strike PLV. And that's cool. And that's great. And you also want to emphasize like, but then the ball PLV, you know, that's interesting of, it's just a way for us to get a better sense of where they're getting their points from where they're getting the, you know, what is their strength of the two? Is it just that you throw a lot of strikes or is it that, no, this is a quality pitch and he throws a lot of strikes, right?
Yeah, I think mistake rate covers a little bit of like the strike one, or in this case, the zone. Like I would say more of a in zone, out of zone distinction rather than strike or ball, because if a guy swings at a non-competitive pitch, that's still going to be a strike and maybe, you know, it shouldn't have been. But like really good mistake rate, 4.6%. It was 28th overall, you know, so I think his in zone pitches are good. I think they are good. I think if his in zone pitches are good and he does a good job of limiting his non-competitive pitches out of the zone, like that's going to be a winning combination, at least in terms of whip.
Yeah. So why am I out on him? Well, there's the two reasons. One, he went from a 9 hit per 9 to a 7 hit per 9 last year. And I'm just not ready to say, cool, that's going to stick around. I don't think that he is much different from his 2024 self with his four seamer to say like, yep, this is a brand new guy. And this is going to be vastly different. He did gain an extra inch of vert in a slight uptick in velocity, but it's still not enough for me to really be convinced. And the real reason is that he cannot find a secondary. And I don't have any faith. If I had to really decide like, okay, he's going to improve with one of the secondaries and actually take form and shape and go, you know, destroy the league, or he's going to still be struggling and every day have a new experimentation and we'll see what happens. Yeah, it's more likely the latter. So that means you are not going to get much more than a 21% strikeout rate, probably closer to 20% still. And the ERA and whip, as we're stating, likely not going to stick as it is. So it's just going to be hopefully a ratio play. And also without the extended arsenal, I don't see him going farther than 6 innings often. So it is still going to be a case for fewer innings. It's just, you got to have something more. And it's not a high swing strike rate four-seamer.
No, he's not getting strikeouts
on it. And I can't, it's like a worse Drew Rasmussen is what I see. I like the results, right? Because it's like, okay, it's a ratio ERA play. You're not going to get all the strikeouts. And it's more believable to me that the ERA and whip are there for Rasmussen versus Nelson. And he's even like said, like, I am neither a supernator or a pronator. He said to Eno, which is hilarious. Essentially means like if you're a supinator, then you're better at breaking stuff. A pronator, you're better at your four seamer and your changeup. But
yeah,
he can't do the changeup. So what the heck? yeah, I go back and forth. Like if Ryan Nelson comes out and he goes 4.2 innings of like 300 runs or something, but yeah, like it makes sense. Like 4 Ks, like yep, mm-hmm. You know. And I'm not gonna necessarily say that he's gonna have another great run out of the gate, but
he did finish the season. You know, yeah. 90 plus pitches in the last 6 starts, 6 of his last 7, he went 6 innings. And that's even, you know, he got, you know, it's,
they oh, absolutely. He went 6 yeah. innings. Exactly. Like, this is actually kind of my point, Kyle, is that it's not more than that. That's like the cap to me. And I didn't even know this game log. I didn't even know the number of pitches. I didn't know. You, essentially, to like be a guy that goes into the seventh with any consistency, how that works generally is you have a second offering that is also, you're also able to throw early counts to get be efficient with it. That is a surprise, right? But he doesn't have one. So with that case, like, yes, I mean, this is an incredible run. 6.16666656 is bonkers and pretty much going 90 pitches plus all the time. Great. He had one game, I think two games, more than six innings last year. Three. 6.1, 6.2, and a 7. And I just, it just doesn't speak to a guy that can flirt with that. And if you're not going to have a high strikeout rate, that is how you make up for it. Otherwise, you're in Toby territory.
Yeah.
And when I say like Toby upside, it was what I mean is you should be able to be more like the next little step. So is he going to take that or is it going to be worse than what we just saw? And it's more likely it's going to be worse. But I want to be wrong. Like, I really, really hope I'm wrong on this. And I don't blame this pick at all. Again, guys, 16th round. You shouldn't expect anyone on your team at this point to stay on your team. So I'm cool with it. I think he should be drafted around here. It's just, I just want to be, feel better about it. Okay. Sorry. We are so long in this. Tanner Scott, 17th round. We'll talk about him after this break. Tanner Scott, we're actually not going to talk about him much because this is just a reliever spot, isn't it?
Yep. Closer for the Dodgers. Great PLV. Enough said.
All right. Yep. I mean, look, at this point, you're going to fill in with any sort of closer opportunity that you have when it's February, March. It's going to be way different than what it was in October. Yep. Zebby Matthews, 18th round. I can't get in on this because I feel like it's going to be too much anxiety and too much question marks and likely the SP5 if he is in that rotation, which he should be. Maybe the SP4 or so for the Twins, but he does not command inside the zone well. He is not as good of a command guy as his strike rate would suggest. How do you feel about Zebby Matthews?
I like him. I think he's solid. I think at this point, you know, I'm banking on some positive regression towards he had a above average PLV. He throws, you know, he's got four pitches that he throws 10% of the time. Slider's good. Fastball's really good. Cutter's solid. Changeup's not great. But I mean, like we said, he's got four pitches. He, you know, what command control difference of he's got good control. Like he's throwing a lot of strikes, so he's not getting a lot of walks. 25% strikeout rate last year is not too bad. Yeah. I mean, he's effective, I think. And like at this point in the draft, like I think I can wish on how good PLV thinks his four seam is to carry more of his profile than it did last year.
The one thing I will mention is that Zebby Matthews, he had a 408 BABIP, which is second percentile of his four seamer last season, 340 average allowed. And I say, well, hold on, guys. Let's not do this. Let's use hit luck instead because hit luck is much more about the pitches he's throwing and everything. But that was a plus six and 25th percentile. So it's not, yes, it was maybe a little extreme, but he had an ICR of 56% on his four seamer, first percentile, right?
Yeah,
and he's throwing it 61% of the time in the zone, 70% of the time for strikes. It's clearly something that needs to be tweaked in some way because that is a very hittable four seamer clearly. And it could be a product of the rest of his arsenal. That is, he goes slider and cutter. The changeup isn't a consistent one. Sinker 6% of the time. I don't know if that's really going to be increased. It's at 9% right now against the right-handers. I think it should considering that it had a far lower ICR, 31%. And that might be what he needs to deal with right-handers who have that 56% ICR against him. But it's clear that they are figuring out his sequencing at least. Slider, yes, it does have a massive swing strike rate, 23%. The cutter is, it's shocking to me. He throws it in the zone 70% of the time against right-handers, but a 20% ICR. Like, something's got to give here. Maybe it's just the fastball up and away to right-handers that he's doing is not the right location, which makes sense to me. Don't throw it there. That sounds right. And then against lefties, I do love that cutter inside, but it has a 55% ICR. It seems like it should be doing great, but it just doesn't. And then the slider is down, but it's over the plate too often. 48% ICR to lefties for Zebby Matthews. And oh boy, 441 BABIP on the fastball to lefties. 56% ICR once again. Wow, exactly the same ICR to both right-handers and left-handers for Zebby Matthews. Four-seamer is just pretty much up in middle all the time, always in the upper third of the zone. He's got to figure something out here. And I don't have faith that he will necessarily out of the gate. It feels like he's generally in the right vicinity, but there's something about these pitches that hitters are telling us that is easy to hit with him. He's easy to pick up, or he's making it obvious when it's a four-seamer versus a cutter or a slider, or at least when it is a four-seamer, it's easier. And the slider is clearly having bite. They're still missing a lot of it. But the cutter to lefty is very easy to pick up too. It's strange. And I'm at the point of, I've seen enough from the hitter to tell me that as much as I want to lean in on Zebby Matthews, like, you know, he's hittable. And 10.7 hit per nine last year. 10.7 is so bad.
I mean, it was a 360 BABIP. It was literally first percentile BABIP.
10.7.
That's how you get to that. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It's going to go down. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that number is going to go down.
Yes.
How much?
It's not. It can't go down to like a 7.5 though, right? Like that's like so far. And that's really what you need to be the kind of guy that everyone wants Zebby Matthews to be. So that's where I stand on it. I feel like I'll be happy to miss on Zebby Matthews if he does well than to be holding on too long for him. That's where I am on it. But yeah, it could work out. Like I've been very in on Zebby Matthews in the past and stuff. So I totally understand. Jansen Junk, 19th round. This is a hilarious one. I remember the pitcherless community just yelling at me to embrace Jansen Junk. And I still can't.
Throw more junk. He's like the prototypical command artist. And like it's hilarious if you look at his header on the Our Player page, 2.9% walk rate, and then elite PLV, elite PLA, and pretty much everything else is blue. I'm biased for his POV. I love POV. It does include location, but I look at other models at other sites and I know like location plus from Eno, junk was great. Pitching bot command grade was also great. And since those influence the overall value of the pitch, he was rated extremely high by pretty much all of the pitch modeling systems last year. I think this is something where it's very hard to model these guys at the extremes. I think that he's getting over like that PLV and the modeling stats overvalue that location because the stuff is just so lacking. But I think at the same time, you know, you look at, well, he had a 314 FIP last year. I think some of the issues where he ran into some very poor sequencing luck, 63.7 left on base rate, which was 8th percentile. That's going to just add runs, you know, regardless of, you know, even assuming he allows the same number of hits and walks, if you sequence them poorly, they're going to lead to more runs than, you know, alternately. He had below average BABIP allowed. I think that this is something where it is kind of me being like, let's get the model guys. But I do like the skills. I do like his ability to command. I know anecdotally, he trains at Driveline, and he was one of the guys that they really promoted as, we do command training too. And he was in a lot of their command training videos. And so to see that kind of get reflected in our results in the MLB was like, okay, this is like a conscious thing that they're trying to do. And you're talking about going deep into games. Well, he's got, you know, a handful of 7-inning games where he's throwing pitches in the 80s, that he's throwing pitches that are efficient rather than just relying on throwing a high pitch count to get there. And, you know, that comes from having a deeper, a more equitable mix of 38% four seam, 29% slider. and then 14 sweeper, 12 curveball, 8 change. That he's got a lot of pitch. He throws a lot of junk, fittingly. And so it works, and he can command it all very well.
Yeah. I mean, just to clarify here, our models do not treat all strikes the same, correct? As in,
what do you
like
mean?
The value of a strike in 00 versus 01 versus 02.
Yeah, like it gives you get more credit for like getting a whiff on in a two strike count because you have now you've finished that plate appearance that batter right. can get zero runs versus right. going from 00 to 01. They're expected to produce fewer runs, but they can still produce runs.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm not going to buy into this. Sorry. I'm just
17% strikeout rate doesn't excite you?
No, it does not. But it's a 3% walk rate. Yeah, okay. I just can't. I really just can't. All right. We have four guys to go here. You have Max Muncy, the one on the Dodgers, which I think is pretty cool in the 20th round. I mean, that's for a backup third baseman. More likely a waiver wire play. I don't feel as if entering the season you're going to see things from Max Muncy that says, hey, you know what? Maybe I'm going to actually put him in my lineup. But it seems like Max Muncy is someone that can be a good backup play for you.
Oh, I think that Max Muncy, he could plausibly be your starting third baseman. Like I was talking with some people as this mock was going on about I might just have him go as my starter. I think people are really sleeping on what he did last year. I know people love to talk about, oh, well, he got glasses and became good. It's like the opposite of all of those rom-coms where she takes her glasses off and suddenly she's much more attractive. He put them on and that's that line is way more attractive to me. But sorry, but he's great. He's a process plus darling. He did extremely well. He does a lot of things very good, very good. Decision value, hits the ball really hard. Our hitter comp tool, he fared very well. 260 average, 27 homers. He's going to be probably a platoon guy. He had some pretty stark platoon splits, so that's something to be aware of. But like, I think when he's hitting, he's going to do very well for your team, and he hits in a great lineup. So I think that he's in my utility slot right now, and I'm very happy to kind of run him there as my utility bat.
Nice. 21st round is Reed Detmers, and I feel like Reed Detmers should be traded. And I think that's why you have him here, because Reed Detmers should be a starter again. I don't trust the Angels as an organization, nor do I trust that infield or really just that defense within what, negative 57, I think it was outs above average last year.
Yeah, it was horrific. It was like twice as bad as the second worst team.
Explains Jose Soriano. And and Reed Detmers feels like the perfect trade candidate. Why did you pick Reed Detmers in the 21st?
I mean, he's like, what if Jansen Junk had better stuff as far as like the model? POV loves him.
I mean, okay, so Reed Detmers, the reliever.
He's a reliever.
Far better in the model.
He's pumping gas that he's likely not going to do as a starter.
Right.
But I think he performed so well that he can give a lot back and still be a very effective starter. I mean, he has started in the past to, we'll say, middling results, you know, more maybe bad.
Flashes of brilliance.
Yes. Yes. He has a lot that you can wish on, but I think
no hitter bobblehead up there. Okay. Even though that was not a good game.
The Reed Detmers fan club you got going there.
Oh boy.
Yeah. I think this is very much a dart throw of I was so impressed by what his pitch quality was last season out of the pen. And the fact that he has prior starter experience, that I think he can, I think there's a higher opportunity for him to merge those two skills together and be a positive starter, especially here in we're in the 21st round now.
All right. 22nd round is Jose Caballero. Tell me about this one. Shortstop for the Yankees.
Yeah. I mean, stolen base play. He has a ton of position eligibility. He played all around the diamond for the Yankees. So he's got shortstop, outfield, third, second. So, you know, if Luke Kuechly doesn't work out, I have my second baseman here. He didn't play a lot last year, but I think the Yankees are likelier to play him this year because He's an average bat. He had a 97 WRC plus last year, but he's plus defense. So the Yankees want that in their lineup. And like the crazy thing is he had 49 stolen bases in 370 plate appearances. That he led the league in stolen bases while hitting in, like, he had less playing time than most catchers. And so this is something where if you have any sort of question marks about your stolen bases, the dart throw for Caballero at the end is great. Because he can fill in any positions for you. He's not going to be a big minus with the bat. I think, you know, he's not going to get you a ton of power, but I think he'll hit well enough. And then, yeah, just incredible stolen bases. Like, he's the kind of guy that can win you a category, you know, and like that has value, especially here at like the end of the draft.
Absolutely. And 23rd round is Kyle Harrison now with the Red Sox. We don't know if he's going to start. This is absolutely the dart throw to say, like, okay, cool. How's he look at a camp? Is there a new cutter as well for Kyle Harrison? But considering the options here in the last round, the ones before him, Sawyer, Gibson Long, Brandon Sproat, Casey Mize, Clay Holmes, I understand why not? Let's just see what happens to Kyle Harrison.
Yeah, like this is me banking on, well, he's had some plus scouting reports in the past. PLV was 5-2-1, you know, even though he was mixing starting and relieving. Boston, I think, has a good front office, a good pitching dev. So, yeah, I believe, and yeah, it's the last round. If they trade for another starter, if they get Pablo Lopez, okay, I drop him and pick up, you know, who's next on the waiver wire.
Absolutely. All right, so that is your draft, Kyle. On a scale of 1 to 23, how do you feel about this draft?
I'm feeling like a 17.
17, okay.
Yeah,
I feel pretty good. Yeah,
I feel good. I feel good about it. I really like. I like my hitting balance. I like a lot of my pitching. I think I might have taken some swings that Wheeler Abbott back to back is maybe two picks I would want back. But other than that, I like what I did. Especially for how early it was, for more based on my perception and my understanding of what was going into the projections. I like where this shaped up.
Nice. And what strategies are you going to change now that you've done this draft that you're going to apply for February, March?
Well, I think I'm going to look into more kind of upside for starters. In this one, I leaned a lot into volume, maybe at the expense of K rate. And I think for most of my drafts, I'm probably going to more aggressively target strikeout rate guys, higher stuff guys. And then because I'm likely to also just churn through a starter every week and try and find like that new guy. So I don't necessarily need as high a floor. I can chase ceiling a little bit more. And then I don't know. There are a couple positions. I think shortstop has a couple more options. First base, I can wait on catcher till I get Drake Baldwin in the last rounds. I think those are all kind of options that this mock showed me I have available to me.
All right, nice. And what was your favorite pick outside of the obvious ones that we'd have more information now that wasn't on your team?
My favorite pick that wasn't on my team?
Mm-hmm.
I loved Nate Schwartz. I loved how he started this draft. I think, you know, maybe Juan Soto at third maybe isn't my favorite value-wise, but I think it's inspired. I am a huge Juan Soto truther, and I like him top three. So it's great to see that I'm not on an island there, or at least there's one other person on the island with me. But I think it's a toss up whether it's Crochet at the end of the second or Marte at the start of the third. I think both of those picks are great. I think Crochet, you could argue at the end of the first even, and to get at the end of the second, it's so good. I think that's such value for that. And I think that affords you the ability to do a lot of other things with the rest of your draft. So that was one of my favorites, especially early on.
Nice. All right. Well, that is it, guys. You should definitely be following Kyle Bland at Blandalytics on Twitter and at Blue Sky. Kyle Bland, the director of analytics here at PitcherList. And of course, if you want PL Bot helping out with your teams, it beat me by one this year with the SB streamers. We both had very successful years with like 100
back-to-back champs.
I should have not done Charlie Morton in the last day. I knew this. I should not have done it, and I would have tied. So dumb. But you get so many things with PL Pro and access to these projections. If you haven't signed up for it yet, what are you doing? Ad-free website, too, and the best baseball community on the internet, bar none.
Oh, easily.
Once you experience it, you do not want to leave it.
80-grade community.
It's really just kind people. Talk about the right way. There's none of the ridiculousness of the internet inside of it. And if there is, we say goodbye to them. Yeah, we show them the door.
Baseball is
that is how important it is to us. So make sure you sign up for it today. You can get 50% off with promo code podcast through this podcast. So, or the On the Corner podcast. I am tired and cold and freezing. And thank you all so much for listening to this one. So on behalf of Kyle Bland, my name is Nick Pollock, and we'll do more of On the Corner in the new year.